Welcome back to this week's installment of Expand Your Mind and Be Kind. Thanks for joining Ryan and I on our adventure, and I hope everyone enjoys our episode. Thank you.
If we have no peace, it is because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. It's a little quote by our dear Mother Teresa. And the way I kind of interpret this quote is, we as humans need each other. We function the best when we support and help each other. And I feel like that is the core of some of the main issues that exist in our country today, specifically our country. And that actually will lead into the topic we're going to talk about today.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing splendidly. If they were doing any better, there might be two of me.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, I hope that you are doing well, and so are our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, speaking of doing well and being well, and kind of on top of that quote we had, I wanted to talk about healthcare. We'll concentrate on a couple of areas, but you know, I've learned a lot of things being in nursing school and being working in the healthcare field, and I have lots of friends that stand on both sides of the issue of nationalized healthcare. No, and it's for me personally probably one of the topics that I'm probably most passionate about.
And you have a unique perspective, I mean, of pretty much anyone else that I personally know, because you're kind of on the precipice of getting started to practice nursing amidst a global pandemic.
So, it's interesting, to say the least. A learning experience for everyone.
As an aside for everyone out there, Jim has been going through nursing school, and I just want to say I'm really proud of him. He's stuck with it in amidst a lot of obstacles and trying to make things work. He's done a kick-ass job, so really, really happy that Jim has stuck with it, and really appreciate his resilience and persistence with it, and I'm no doubt in my mind he's going to be a really great nurse.
Well, thank you, Ryan. That means a lot to me. Well, so what I wanted to talk about today, I kind of wanted to pose a couple of questions. And I'm sure you've got some questions too that you want to ask me.
Sure.
So something that is bothered me for the longest time, and has really only become augmented during COVID-19 and all of the things that have arisen from this pandemic, is why don't we have nationalized healthcare?
Yeah.
Like, what are your thoughts? I just want to hear your quick rundown.
Well, I feel that most policy decisions that don't go the way that certain people think they should go are based on interest, and most of that is economic. And like money a lot of driven. That has to do, yeah. So a lot of that has to do with capitalism and the way our economy is structured. Big pharma and a lot of the way that healthcare is done today is you have privatized insurance, and people look for the best rates and all those different kinds of things. But then you have to, it's a logistic nightmare, to be frank, about like receiving care where you have coverage and trying to sort out, especially if you're older and you have to deal with Medicare and Medicaid. And it's just, yeah, it's really just mostly driven from my perspective from it's so deeply ingrained in the way that our healthcare system works by it being competitive that deciding to kind of pull that out of the way of the fabric of how our healthcare system works would just, I think people are afraid it would be catastrophic and things would crumble. And it would also discourage innovation and research and those kinds of things, because if there's a nationalized healthcare option, then the motivation, kind of the same reason a lot of people argue against socialism and communism, is that they think that if there is not an incentive to innovate, because I'm not trying to win your business because there's no business to win in that sector industry, then why try? But I also think that people are just innately driven to make things better. So those are my thoughts. I don't know if that was coherent or made any sense.
I mean, that kind of lays a pretty good like foundation of our current situation. So from a healthcare perspective, it's always been kind of frustrating because I've cared for, like, been a part of a treatment team for patients that had doors closed to them because of their quality of insurance or their, like, lack thereof. And I have seen people come in actually to the emergency room, for example, with something that was so terrible but so preventable because they didn't have insurance. Like they had become as sick as they, or they became sicker than they should have if they had had preventative health care. And then it causes a whole slew of problems. It's like, I mean, to put it brutally, it's like owning a car. Not brutally, simply. That's the wrong word choice.
That's all right.
Simply, it's like owning a car. A car is like yourself as a person, and then not doing any maintenance on it whatsoever. Like taking it in to get checked up, have diagnostics run on it. And then literally driving it into the ground until it's pretty much a broken down wreck, and then trying to turn it into a coherent without replacing really any of its parts.
Yeah, so you're basically just band-aiding the issue. Yeah.
I mean, without being granted, like too literal. We as humans can have organ transplants. I mean, and the technology is rapidly advancing. And stuff like that, just to kind of on the simple terms. But for the most part, we are stuck with the body we have. So shouldn't we take the utmost care for it that we can preventatively so that we never let these crazy, off-the-wall, super sick situations happen?
What are some... that gets me thinking about, you know, preventative care. What are some ways that you think, other than the obvious things like diet and exercise, that people can take care of themselves that will be kind of a preventative maintenance to their car, so to speak?
I just use that as a simple analogy.
No, I like the analogy.
Funny aside, I've always looked at surgeons as being overglorified human mechanics. bad rap.
I feel like
they do
fair.
A lot of good work.
Yeah.
That's unfair too also. But anyway, that's why I came up with that analogy. But so on top of taking care of yourself and the obvious things like exercise and diet that we all kind of really know that we should be doing but somehow still manage to neglect, being able to catch things early, so like being able to go to that yearly doctor's visit, to have those labs run, to have your blood pressure checked, vitals done on a regular basis, can catch things like diabetes or heart disease or you know, some kind of genetic disease congenital disease that you didn't know you had before it becomes an ER visit, you know, an unplanned ER visit. And until it gets to the point where your body is ruined and it's too far gone.
Also, I don't want to claim to know more than I do, so feel free to correct anything that I say that's but especially with something like diabetes, like if you don't understand and know to keep that in check and under wraps, you can actually lose limbs because of that. And so like catching that early and doing some preventative care to get it from stopping to progress as much. Same thing with like something that's chronic, like cancer, mm-hmm. or
catching cancer early heart disease. Incredibly important for prognosis. Yeah, especially
depending on the like where it's located in the body and things like that, right. too. So, yeah.
So like, let's just do a hypothetical alternate reality here. And actually, really, it's not even that hypothetical, because you can just run over to France and have a perfect example, or the United Kingdom, or Germany, and see this in action. But the ability to just have that convenience to check, even though like most of your visits would probably be pretty quick and probably pretty uneventful, if you get that visit that catches that tumor right when it's forming, or that metastasis, or whatever it is, catch it right away, your chances of not only living or having a better quality of life is much higher, but also the amount of money spent on interventions and things to help keep you alive go way down as well. You don't have to have that expensive surgery. You don't have to have that incredibly expensive, like 5 rounds of chemo, which is ridiculous. That doesn't usually happen. That's a lot of chemo. Yeah.
Jim, wait. For one thing that we probably should say as a caveat and kind of a notice in this episode is we are not giving you medical advice. Like this is not, this episode is not to inform you about things that you should do to take care of your body. If you have questions, go to your care practitioner, right. your family doctor or a specialist to get looked at. We're really just talking.
Go to the cdc.org or
conceptually about a lot of this stuff. Right. And Jim is more informed than I am and has had some formal training, but an education on this, but I would strongly encourage anybody who has questions to not take what we say in this episode
right as any sort of
biblically. Anyway, I just felt like we should probably say that up front.
Good catch. That's very important. I ain't no doctor, and even if I was, I still wouldn't have all the answers. But like, it doesn't that just make more sense to
you would think
have that nip things in the bud before they happen, you know, fix your brakes before they run out and you smash into the back of a car, you know, that going back to that analogy.
So that makes me think of like a logistic concern then. So do you think that there could be some sort of overload of the system if we nationalized healthcare? So like you think our hospitals and our primary care physicians would be overwhelmed given that there's already really a shortage of all of those?
It's a valid point. I mean, yes and no. I mean, I'm no expert on healthcare staffing around the country. I'm not going to pretend to be one, but given the demand for services, you're you'll get the people to fill those spots. Like if the argument that you can't find enough healthcare providers or healthcare workers in a nationalized system, like that is a thing, then every other first world country in the world, by the way, that's a fact. Every first world country in the world has nationalized healthcare, except for the United States of America. Then they would have the same problems, and they don't. In fact, in my time that I spent in Spain, I actually got to experience the healthcare system there personally, and I volunteered at a local public hospital just because I, with my university that I was there with, they allowed us to do like a day volunteering there just to see what it was like. And what I was told was that actually the public hospitals are the place to work at. Like they had private hospitals, they had private insurance for those people who wanted like the bells and whistles kind of that could afford it. But everyone saw the public system as like being the standard, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it had the most stable pay. Like the other, like private hospitals would pay more, but the public hospitals would pay more consistently.
Huh.
And they have no staffing. Like most first world countries have no problems with staffing. So I feel like we would answer that question when we came to it. But speaking of like us on the national level, something that's always baffled me, and I don't know if it's common knowledge, but it's like the amount of GDP that we spend on our healthcare system is ridiculous. Because we are a sick country, and people usually, even people with insurance, will only actually get treatment when things have gotten too bad because their health insurance is not the best, and so therefore will not cover everything, and therefore like fear-mongers people away from getting said services. We spend as a nation, and this is coming from the commonwealthfund.org, there's like a multinational compilation on GDP expenditures on healthcare costs. And we as a nation spend 16.9% of our GDP on healthcare.
That is crazy.
Just to give you an example of what the UK spends, 9.8%. And they're considered that, and then Germany, which spends 11.2%, are considered to have some of the best healthcare systems in Europe and amongst the first world countries.
Wow. That's surprising.
Right. I mean, you think, oh, well, you get taxed more, so therefore it costs more. Like, costs more to, but see, with that, when you do away with all the fluff, you know, all the high rollers, the massive, because healthcare in this country right now is a money game, let's be honest. It's all for profit, even though hospitals can claim nonprofit status, their CEOs are still making $5 million a year. Like, they're not making profit, but they're staying steady. And that's all you need to be a nonprofit. So it's a for money game. And so when you're in a for money game that's at the expense of people's health, it's money driven. And so why should the system be really interested in having a healthy population? And this is like semi-conspiracy theory of me, but there's no motivation by the collective insurance companies, drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies, medical technology companies to have a healthy, vibrant populace, because everybody's money goes down.
Yeah. Well, and thinking of the pharma companies, and I don't know this for certain, so maybe you're a little more informed on this than I am, but I've heard that some of the companies hold patents on drugs, and so you have to buy the name brand, and they can't make generic drugs, and so you're forced to buy a drug that is purposefully gouged because you kind of have a monopoly on that drug. And it could be that specific company has kind of pioneered treatment for whatever they're doing. And so it's like, well, if I have I'm going to use an example like ulcerative colitis or something like that. I've seen a ton of like commercials for that. That's the only reason that I pulled that example out. But like, if I see that and I have one option because the company, you know, and I go
has
and get
the monopoly on
get
it,
diagnosed by my doctor and it says, Ryan, you have ulcerative colitis. And then I'm like, okay, well, what do I do? And they're like, well, you can buy this medicine, but it's really expensive. You know, then I really have no option, right? Like my option is live with the symptoms of what I have and maybe take painkillers or something like that. Or I buy alternate this very expensive medication.
Right. And go bankrupt and lose everything. And where are you then?
Right. And then your quality of life goes right down anyway, because you're stressed out about finances and, mm-hmm. and it's, yeah. Anyway,
perfect example of that.
Actually, get on a rabbit hole, but
well, no, I just want to like continue on to what you were saying just a little bit, like actually the prime example of that. And it's like almost kind of a joke in the nursing community. Like I've heard it many times as a student, is that HIV medication used to be so expensive that really only rich people like Magic Johnson could afford it. So it's like, oh, well, HIV kills, except for Magic Johnson.
Yeah, and they had a South Park episode about that.
Yeah, they did.
Where they showed really that funny, the resistance so to HIV up. Was that he just had a bunch of money around him. And it's like, a satire, but it's like, that's the truth. Like,
right.
If you have a disease like that, we have a virus that won't go away, you have to do something about it. And if that's your only option, you just have to have money.
Right. And it obviously has become cheaper. I think sure. One medication like Truvada, I want to say, is become much more affordable and people can afford to be on it. And it is, we've gotten to the place almost where just about anyone can afford, either through subsidies or through like good insurance, can afford to be on antiviral medications for HIV that allow them to live a pretty full normal life, which is amazing, but it's not always the case. And a large part of that is, you know, because I'm sure the patent ran out or whatever, but for a long time, like that, the medication was only reserved for the wealthiest. And that's really the way our health system is. That's the foundation of our health system. The wealthy get the best services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just wrong. I would love for all people to have access to the services they need, the scans they need, the medications they need. And why is that such a crazy thing?
Yeah. Well, so that makes me think too, what about people that have insurance that still choose not to go to the doctor? Like,
because it's still expensive.
But I've heard
you can have good
say,
insurance,
like,
and you still will have copays. You still will have office fees, and your procedure, because a for-profit health system raises the cost of everything. Because that's where the money's at.
Yeah,
your procedure of $100,000 of the heart surgery that was done, the stents that were put in. Oh, you've got amazing insurance. You only have to pay 10%. That's a new car. You literally just had to buy a new car to save your heart. What if you don't have that money? Or what if you didn't have that savings?
Yeah.
It's just wild, like how much we spend. And honestly, like the federal government, like so AKA our tax dollars, still funds a lot of our healthcare system because so many things are written off by hospitals to cover losses from patients who had insurance but couldn't pay, or and those are sometimes even the hardest hit people because they have insurance, they should be able to pay, or like people who don't have any insurance or on like disability or something, so the state covers them. The hospital will get tax write-offs on those quote-unquote losses, because they are losses. It's if you look at it as on a business standpoint, they didn't get money for services rendered. That is recovered in things they don't have to pay in taxes or like in other forms of you know, in like forms of like federal aid or something that a hospital might receive.
Yeah.
So like one way or another, we still pay a lot. Like the government pays a lot, not just us as a nation, as a whole, as part of our gross domestic product, but even our government currently spends a lot on healthcare.
Yeah.
Through Medicare, Medicaid, and then like all of the nonprofit statuses and tax breaks that hospitals get. But
so one of the things I want to get your thoughts on is I've heard that if healthcare is nationalized, that we'll pay doctors less, and
some doctors could use a little less in payment. Let me tell you. I know that's probably an unpopular opinion, maybe, especially amongst doctors, but I know of surgeons, and I don't know why I keep picking on surgeons. There's a lot of awesome surgeons out there that make an obscene amount of money, an actual obscene amount of money. But the people who really make it are the people like at the top of the administrations all across the company in the healthcare.
So like the CEOs and like,
yeah. Yeah. And not just the CEOs, like the whole administration is together. Like, I mean, some of these hospital systems have incredibly huge administrative wings, you know, like people that are in charge of this. Every hospital system, which there are not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of in this country, each have their own administrative services, have their own CEOs, CFOs, you know, boards, whatever it may be, shareholders. And like all of those people are collecting, especially the ones at the top, because it comes with them. Obviously that job comes with the most responsibility, you could argue, get paid corporate America salaries, which if on the surface, you really can't be mad at that, because it's like, well, that's what other CEOs and other companies make, and why is that such a big deal? But when you're not talking about stocks and your Amazon shares, we're talking about healthcare and people's lives and sickness and death.
Sure. I definitely don't want to make a comparison between these two, but I mean, look at presidents. look at professional athletes. For example, I mean, someone close to our home, Patrick Mahomes, right?
Mm-hmm.
He just signed over $100 million contract with the Kansas City Chiefs. You can't tell me there is no world that anybody could live in where someone deserves to make that much money.
Right.
Especially someone who's an athlete that throws a ball around the field. Like, right. don't get me wrong. I love sports. I am not ragging on the concept of sports. I am more just saying, like, we want to pay these people a lot, but then like teachers are making. Yeah.
Even nurses, dude, there's a lot of nurses that don't make, like, they go through so much school and, you know, I mean, to get your BSN, you have to have a bachelor's degree, and you come out, some nurses come out only making like $45,000-$50,000 a year. I mean, there's some like construction jobs that pay better than that.
Sure.
And I'm not going to get down that road, because there are,
well, no. And I didn't want to do that, because I was really just using an example of like, mm-hmm. There could be some adjustment, but then what we would need to consider is from an educational standpoint, like, we also should have free education, you know, free college education, public college education. If you want to pay for a private college education, you can, if you want to get something that's
true,
more whatever.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Well, no, I'm using this as an example of, mm-hmm. that could justify a pay cut for doctors if they're not coming out of college with $100,000-$200,000 of debt. And that's the argument that is, mm-hmm. the counter argument to,
because you're a slave to debt pay when you come out of college.
Right. And yeah, you can justify having that debt if you're making several hundred grand a year to work in a job that's very valuable. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, taking care of people's health is of one of the most important aspects of society, but don't Yeah, there. I guess the other reason that I bring this up is because it's also not simple, and I think sometimes Never people is. Like to overly simplify these arguments, where it's like, let's just have nationalized healthcare. Let's just do this, and it's like, yes, that would be very valuable, but at the same time, we also need to consider like what's a logical step to get to the next logical step. That's slowly getting us to that area, because the reality is we're not going to be able to get there quickly
and instantly.
Right.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is, or what I'm trying to understand is, why we haven't come to an agreement with this yet as a nation. I mean, it's something that's been debated for over 100 years in our country. And many times it's been close to a vote. But it makes no sense to spend double what other countries spend on healthcare, have worse outcomes, and have much sicker people. And treat healthcare as if it's like Amazon or, you know, Goldman Sachs. Like it's a corporation, it's a money making business, when we are dealing with life and death and people's lives. And a lot of the times, yes, people make bad decisions, but a lot of times a lot of this stuff happens at no fault of their own. And when we do, if we do ever get to a place where we can agree on that as a country, yes, there will be growing pains. Yes, there will be hiccups, and there's no such thing as a perfect system. There will be drawbacks to this system. It will not be perfect. There's, like I said, there's like, that is impossible. But at the end of the day, do we place healthcare in a corporate role, or do we place it in a social department, or like a social responsibility place? I think that's ultimately the question that we need to come to.
Yeah, and I that's a question worth answering. I guess I have one more kind of question and thought for you before we take a break, and that is, what do you think is the first best logical step from your standpoint? Like, as a society, what can we do to edge ourselves a little closer to that being at least a serious consideration and conversation to nationalized healthcare? Or at least an option for that. Not necessarily that it's mandated, but an option for everybody to use.
I mean, Lord, how many people have debated the different ways we're going to go about doing this? And I mean, it's when, for the last 20, 30 years, it's been a very hotly debated topic. And I claim to be no expert on the issue, but from my point of view and my personal opinion, these are just my thoughts. It's going to have to be a gradual process. You can't extinguish billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars worth of company overnight. That would cause anarchy.
True.
But if you provided a catch system, like a net system, kind of like what I guess the Affordable Care Act was supposed to be, kind of, and / Medicare when it was originally created, Medicare, Medicaid. If you expanded on that and you put those insurance companies at a, because that's what they are, essentially, they're social insurance companies, at a greater disposition, so like essentially increasing the funding for Medicare, you would start seeing that the public or the private sector wouldn't be able to compete with it as much, because the bargaining power of the federal government, no one matches.
Right.
Because they're not in it for profit.
So you're saying like de-incentivizing that behavior.
Right. Slowly.
Is something that could push us a little closer to.
And I'm actually for the renaming of Medicare. I know it's a name that was it made, I think in the 60s when Medicare came out, 60s or 70s. But it that name carries so much controversy, and it's old and antiquated, that they just need to rename it and reorganize it and increase the funding. Yes, it'll cost more in our taxes. Yes, we'll probably lose some things other places. Some of our other places in government could do with some losing. That's a whole nother topic.
Sure.
But that would put pressure on the private. Like, if you take the incentive away to make billions, you won't have the companies there making billions.
Sure.
Off of people's health. So that's
total sense.
And that obviously starts at the voting booth. That kind of change would have to start there. But
yeah.
That's my 2 cents.
All those good are question. Some very valuable 2 cents. All right, everybody. Well, we are going to take a break, and we'll be right back with you with our Be Kind suggestion for today. Jim, always appreciate the conversation. I feel like I learned some stuff today.
Me too.
All right. We'll see you all here soon. It's okay.
Welcome back, everyone. So for our Be Kind segment of the podcast, this is just a very simple thought I wanted to share. So we, as a nation, should stop arguing over the details and trying to decide if it's, you know, government or not government. We shouldn't make healthcare a divisive issue. It's something that affects us all. I'm sorry, but cancer, most diseases, and accidents don't really discriminate. You'll see people from every walk of life, every profession, and every part of socioeconomic status in an ER. And we need to recognize that as a country. Or we need to either come to agreement where it doesn't matter at all, or it really does. You know, we need to decide as Americans, are we going to join the rest of the first world, or really the world, in caring for our own with our collective money? And so I would just ask, put aside your political affiliation, your camp that you're a part of, your party that you belong to, the group of people you hang out with. Put aside loyalties and biases, and really dig down and decide, is healthcare something that we need to socially push or like pitch in for, like the police force, schools, fire department, social like net program, like programs that make sure that you don't end up on the street with 5 kids. Social welfare programs, like, does healthcare fit that criteria, or does it need to stay in corporate America and be monetized? At the end of the day, there's going to be no perfect choice. Both are going to come with their own downs and ups and positives and negatives. And we need to decide which one we're going to choose. So it's more of a plea than just asking, like, put aside your party affiliations and decide where we need to be as a country, because it's a very big issue and it affects all of us. That's my soapbox. Ryan, do you have anything to add?
I think that was very well said. And yeah, healthcare is a human issue, not a party issue. I think a good first step to build off of what you just said is to have those conversations with people that you hold near and dear to your heart. Ask them about an experience they had in the medical system, you know, in our healthcare system. What was it like? How would they imagine it to be different? What would they suggest to do to improve? And then you can use that to have a conversation with them about Well, what you're asking for could be possible, because as Jim mentioned in the episode, most of the things that we do are experiences related to healthcare, especially if we've had loved ones who have been afflicted by chronic disease and illness. It's not only incredibly emotionally taxing, but it is economically. And that is a good thing to do, is to talk through those issues with people, and not to demand things of them, but to just be curious and ask and have them imagine what they would like. But like Jim mentioned, this isn't something that we can really wait on. It's something that we need to act. And one of the ways that you can do that is by bringing awareness. I think that was really well said again by you, Jim, and we would encourage everybody to do that. So we'll be back here in just a little bit with our recommendation for the week. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.
Can't wait to hear about it. Thank you, guys. Welcome back, everyone.
Nice, Jim. We synchronized it.
I said it first, though, right? So, so what do you have for us this week? I am a quiver with anticipation.
So, quick segue into how I learned about this, and I knew of this dish, but I had never made it, and I still haven't. But I'm excited to try it. I watched it on a YouTube video from a couple of comedians that were cooking. And it is called shakshuka, which is, so to give everybody insight if they are unfamiliar with it, it's a traditional breakfast dish. It's an Israeli Middle Eastern. And so it's basically it consists of poached eggs, and it's in a simmering tomato sauce.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's easy. It's relatively healthy, and it takes around 30 minutes to make. Prep time's about 10. And then
I only cook breakfast that takes up 29 minutes exactly. So I think this one's out.
Well, for those of you who enjoy breakfast or dinner, this could be a good option. But yeah, this doesn't have any extra meat in it as well. So if any of you can eat egg and are vegetarian, this is a recipe that you can enjoy. So basically you're doing some dicing of onion, there's bell pepper, there's garlic cloves, paprika, cumin. You can put chili powder in it. Some people don't enjoy the spice, so you can leave that out. I've also seen a few recipes that involve hot peppers that you can also put in there. So kind of the quick is you dice up your bell pepper and your onion. You cook it until the onion is translucent. Add your garlic and your spices. And then you pour the tomatoes and the juice in the pan. Season it with salt and pepper. And then you bring it to a simmer. Then you actually make these fun little nests inside the sauce. And then you crack the eggs into each of the nests. And you cover
little
it.
Chicken
nests. You cook it for about 5 to 8 minutes. And then you've got your shakshuka.
So do you like eat it with a spoon or a fork?
Yeah,
or?
So you eat it like chili. Just put it in a bowl. But yeah, it's apparently really good. I don't normally like to recommend things unless I've tried them first, but all the ingredients sound fantastic, and watching that video was really encouraging to want to check it out. So I think we'll end up trying it out pretty quick, and I'll definitely report back. But that's the recommendation for the week. So
I'm gonna try it out as well. And what was the name of it?
It's called shakshuka.
Shakshuka. All right. Yeah. Shakshuka.
And I'll definitely link to a recipe that I found. Shakshuka.
Yeah. That's what I said. Okay.
Yeah. but yeah, so that's the recommendation for the week. If any of you would like to try it out, again, link to that in the episode notes. And
so, what was the name of the channel that you got it from?
It was a comedian. His name is Bert Kreischer, and he basically invites people over
and shakshuka.
Right. He invites comedians over, and they talk, and he makes a meal for them. And it's kind of fun. But I'll link to the recipe. And if you're interested in watching the video, it's kind of funny. Full disclosure, the video is a little vulgar, because they're comedians and they talk about some racy stuff, but, it is
racist stuff, Ryan.
I know.
Sorry, I'm being so obnoxious right now.
No, that's all right. Also one aside, if you enjoy toasted bread, that's also a nice garnish for it.
So like some crusty bread.
Some ciabatta or something that's got a little crust to it.
Some sourdough, some lovely sourdough.
Sourdough would be good. But then you sprinkle feta as a garnish, and it's apparently pretty darn good. So anyway, everybody, thank you so much, as always, for listening to the episodes. Jim and I love doing the podcast. Be sure to tune in next week when we do another episode, and have a good rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you around.
Will do. Everyone, don't forget to shakshuka.
Shakshuka.
Hey everybody, thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as Jim and I enjoy making it. If you'd like to subscribe, we will be sending out future content within the coming weeks, months, and years. So feel free to do that, and we'd love to have you around.
And Ryan, don't forget, we're on social media.
Oh, that's right. We are on Twitter at expandmind, be kind, and that is the letter B. And then we are also on Gmail. If you want to send us an email, it's expandyourmindandbekind@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us questions or any thoughts that anyone may have, and can't wait till the next episode.
Like Dr. Dre.